Yeah, we did. We actually paid $800,000 if you look at the old financials.
Bonnie,
do you mind if we take a break from your report and address this issue for a couple minutes and answer, get these people who have asked to speak?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, I have Patty and then Teresa.
Well, I don't want to go too far into it, but it seems like Don Warren had some other ideas about that, whether we've really retired our debt or not. So I don't think we've had a chance to really discuss that on the meeting because we haven't been able to get to it in the executive session. So can we really say that now?
Yeah, well, you remember we are talking about a debt that goes back to 2002 of $3.4 million. And,
yes, but what's about this other amount?
Look, can we... What's being discussed is an item that may be in some contention that more properly belongs in executive session. So
exactly.
Like,
so yeah. I just want to make that point that, you know...
I'll discuss that now, and we can address it in our executive session at the next meeting. Teresa?
I just really want to make sure that we get to address that item in executive session.
Okay.
I'd like to put it to rest.
Can you note, Casey, in the minutes that we will address the question by retirement of debt in executive session? And any issues associated with it?
Yes.
Legal debt from stemming from 02.
Yeah, thanks to Casey. Did anybody else have anything?
Well, if I could try. So, Lonnie, if the national office was able to pay off, even though WBAI did not pay what they needed to pay, which I believe was $50,000 this year, that means that the national office had enough funds to pay and you just hurt your surplus so that you didn't end up with a one-month surplus at the end of the budget year? Is that how I would understand this?
Yes.
I see.
Exactly. That's very insightful, actually, yeah.
I see. And if I'm not going too far, does that mean that the $50,000 that WBAI owes for this year gets forgiven, and does it have to be approved to be forgiven? Do they make it up some fine day, or what?
Well, it goes to the balance sheet and carries over, as you know, from year to year, although it would not show up in the operating, but it would show up in the balance sheet as a debt outstanding.
Lonnie, can I try a different answer to that? I think, Marnie, we don't have any policy on that right now.
Well, we have a policy on keeping track of the debt, so...
Keeping track of, but not on whether or not a station carries over anything that it owed from prior year and has to then make it up. We don't have a policy on that.
No, we do, no. VI has some legal debt stemming back to 04. So it's right there on the balance sheet, too.
I also don't understand how something can get on the balance sheet as a liability of WBAI if it hasn't gone through the P&L section. And when something has been in the cash and capital and has never been in the P&L, I don't understand how it ends up on the balance sheet in the normal sense of things.
Well, cash and capital is not part of it, of the audit process or the normal accounting process. So it can show up on the cash and capital, but... not become part of the final audit report because, and that way it gets to the balance sheet.
I don't get that. Could
can
you
I ask a question?
The debits and the credits on that?
There's a whole report on
So you would like book a receivable from the national office would book a receivable from BAI, and that would be the debit, and it would book a and WBAI would bill. Book a liability, and that's the credit. The debits and credits have to be in each organization.
Yeah, that's very much. We call them the due-to-due-froms here, and Pacific has had that system for some time, where stations loaning money to other stations are tracked and kept. The C receivables and that you see on that balance sheet are often to other stations.
But Baruti, I heard you. I'll call you and just set. One of the whole issues around the inter-unit transfers was this question of, well, does that mean if somebody paid this much that it's owed back? And ultimately, like I remember the auditor saying, all those decisions about which units owe what to what units is basically a decision for the board to make.
Yeah.
But Bonnie, maybe you could answer So what is the current status of whether or not WBAI is going to be asked to come up with $50,000 to pay that debt?
Okay. As you recall, I think I spoke to this at the June board in Berkeley, but the issue of what stations owe how much to the national office, how much to another station, et cetera, is wrapped up with a history that goes back to 2002. And in that situation, I mean, you've all heard the scenario, but let me go cut to the chase. Tracking what stations loan money to what stations, that work was done. I think when you asked for the transfers and the due-to-do funds, that is the exact document I'm talking about, where we reconstructed everything going back as far as we could to 2001 and 2002 to see how money was moved around in this network and who got it and who owed it. That document was produced, I think, a couple of months ago, and we sent it to the audit committee, which had made the original request. Now, the decision that you spoke about, Dave, is absolutely true. How we shall settle some of these old debts, whether we let them go bye-bye, or we allocate some of those debts in a new formula, an old formula, is what the auditor will produce, because we now, at the end of those old debts stemming back to 02 and 01, finally, after all this time, we can see what the final costs are for that those periods when there was turmoil at Pacifica. And we just settled a year ago, I think, some of the outstanding legal cases. So this is the first year where all that legal debt, we can say, most of it at least, is behind us. Now, what has to happen now is who and how the expenses should be allocated.
But what we're asking is right now, as from the national office perspective, what is the current status of your, well, what is your current position with respect to WBAI's obligation apropos that debt?
Yeah, they on our books, and I have to check, and I don't have the due-to-due firms in front of me, but they have an outstanding legal debt they never paid going back to 04, as I recall, $118,000.
Okay, Rudy?
Yeah, I just wanted to get clear in terms of the debt that's on the balance sheet. That was, and I think Aunt Lonnie answered, that's within the foundation, inter-foundation. It doesn't show up as an external liability
that's
to
right.
the foundation.
That's right.
Okay.
And it's net of what maybe owes them, and, you know, the number you might see is like $75,000 on the balance sheet. But that work is done, and that information is available.
Marty, did I hear you again?
Roughly $168,000 is owed by WBAI to the national office to pony up for their share of things.
Yes, I don't have it before me, Marnie, but if it's in the balance sheet, that's going to be accurate.
But Marnie, I would take issue, given our current policy environment, so to speak, I don't think the word owe is correct. What is clear is that it wasn't paid, but the point I'm trying to make is, we don't, and the Finance Committee has never recommended a policy on what happens if the station doesn't meet its obligations in the fiscal to other sectors of the network. That's that whole infrastructure issue that we still haven't done. So I would dispute, as of things, the way things stand right now, whether they, quote, owe anything.
Well, I don't know, Dave. You got an auditor here, and the auditors will take the position that you can eliminate debt by fiat from the board. That won't work.
The auditor told us, as a matter of fact, that all they were doing in that audit was tracking those things, and it was a board decision whether or not units would then be held responsible. That was what the auditor told us.
No, what the auditor said was not that we could arbitrarily eliminate them from our books. What he said was that they could be reallocated, and that percentage reallocation of certain expenses is what the board's decision would entail.
Can I ask two questions?
Go ahead, Bernie.
I wanted to ask Marnie, the number you quoted, the 168, that comes from?
What I just heard, that 118 grand is owed from 04 and
mm-hmm.
50 grand is owed from 05. The 50 grand owed from 05 is very clear from the financials for the full fiscal year preliminary that came out yesterday from Lonnie.
Yeah, they haven't paid it yet.
Okay.
Right.
And then the
so
other
I just added the two together. That's all.
Okay. Quick note on time, everybody. We're now over, but we have an hour for review of available financials, and we got those financials very recently. So may we trim about another 10 minutes off of that item and use this item now to continue to discuss, like, Lonnie's proposals and these other issues?
This is Teresa. May I ask a question?
Yeah, well, let me just do one last question, Teresa, or one last comment on that. The other question is, I think I was kind of leaning towards what Dave was saying, is that, you know, the board can set the policy as to whether or not these inter-foundation loans are forgiven, or, you know, what percentage of them have to be paid. I mean, the auditor can just, he can tell you what happened, but I think it's more of a policy. I mean, if we have to find out what the policy is as it relates to, you know, inter-unit loans and paybacks. I think the board can determine that. I don't think there's anything in accounting that says the stuff has to be paid back, because we're all, you're basically moving money from one pocket to the other within one entity. So we just have to determine whether or not we want to move that money from one pocket to the other, but it's all one foundation.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. The Pacifica does not owe money to itself, and WBAI is part of Pacifica. But I was addressing, Brody, the issue of whether you could simply wipe it off your books and not show it there. Well, the answer is you can't really do it that way. Okay.
I want to ask the question again about time. And I think that we should take at least another 15 minutes to deal with the other things that Lonnie has raised. And I don't want to make this meeting longer than it was scheduled when we approved the agenda. So can we take that time off of the review of available financials and use it now?
This is Teresa. I need to leave about 10 minutes to 7 my time. So I need to leave in about 25 minutes. So
okay.
How much longer is this scheduled?
Well, we still have at least we have an hour to review available financials and a half hour each for the working group report.
Okay.
So I haven't heard anybody say yay or nay to spending 15 more minutes on this and pulling it out of the review of available financials.
Fine with me.
Is there any objection to it? Okay, here now we'll spend 15 more minutes dealing with the stuff that Lonnie's raised in this report. And that includes issues of the calendar, et cetera. So further discussion?
Yeah, Dave, this is Lavarne. I'd like to speak.
Go ahead.
Hi. You know, I'd like to thank Lonnie for the presentation. I can't say that. Well, anyway, thank you. But this is sort of something I've proposed before. I would think for our next PNB meeting that we should invite the treasurers, the business managers, you know, get the GM's approval on that, and invite the treasurers also, so that the proposal that Lonnie has laid out, I think that a working session and any of Lonnie's staff that he would like to invite, but a working session with all of the finance staff and finance committee members would be there together at the PNB meeting and have a special session, maybe a Thursday evening or some blight out sometime on Friday, to really go through and work these issues, have all of the plans and timelines laid out in front of us so we can look at them, critique, and work to move this process forward. And I think that that's really the only way that we can really make these things happen in 06 and get from the discussion part and the piecemeal to an actual implement an action plan at the next PNB meeting and put up a monitoring timetables also in there in order to make this happen. Thanks.
Other discussion? We've been dealing with the issue of the budget calendar, and while Lonnie was talking about calendars, that what I didn't hear in that was really a calendar for when we will meet what goals we have as a committee, but there is still this key issue of the budget calendar for the budget approval process for the coming fiscal, and if we're going to get that implemented, don't we need to move on that right away? You had given some thought to that, right, Brody?
And I think Lonnie was going to, I don't think Lonnie was at the meeting, but I believe Ambrose, I don't know if he had a chance to communicate it to Lonnie, was going to ask Lonnie to come back with a suggested budget calendar. So, yeah, I think we need to, because this...
I was there at the meeting.
Oh, okay.
And budget calendar was in my goals. I think that's important to do. Glad to see we're having a meeting in a week or so or 2 weeks, whenever. So I think we ought to tackle the budget calendar as soon as possible. But what I did say at that meeting, as I recall, was that Marnie had proposed a budget calendar. I said most of that looked good to me and that we would take that as a starting point. I'd be happy to do that. Some of the things ended up maybe a little problematic, but I thought that the timetables proposed in her budget calendar were fine with me. I hope the committee can review them and we could, adopt it.
Well, Baruti, you had also done some work on there. Can you send that to Lonnie as a proposal also?
Sure, that's no problem.
Yeah, I'd be happy to, but we just need to have someone come back with that product, a proposed calendar, budget calendar.
And then the last thing is...
I hear you, Casey.
Oh, I just wanted to speak to, are we going to try to do, I mean, it would be great for me since I'm in New York, if we're going to do this treasurer's meeting, because isn't that next LSB meeting in D.C.?
D.C., yeah.
Yeah, it sounds great for me because I don't like to fly, so I can take a train out of D.C., so I'm happy to say yes, let's do it at the D.C. meeting. That's it for me.
Was that you, Casey, that I heard?
It was Marnie.
As I recall, Lon, what we had said was, or at least my position was, it's really up to management to come up with the calendar, and we can just sort of bless it. But I really do believe in take all the input you want for Rudy and anybody else, but I do believe that it's up to the CFO and the ED, and if necessary with the GMs, to come up with the budget calendar that the organization can live with, and then just pretty much advise us of what that proposed calendar is. I don't think it should be shifted back to the NFC at this point in time. That's my opinion on that. And then, since I've got the floor for a second, I think at this point it's not just a budget calendar, but a forecast or a reforecast calendar that we need to tackle. I mean, the concept of reforecasting, in my mind, means that we need to reforecast in December. And our next meeting is in December. And unless we get this in place, it's going to be March before we get into a forecast. And again, just from my, from what I do for a living, we've already completed what we call our December forecast, and we've completed it in the month of November with only the October actuals to go on. And in November, it has gone up the line to get approved, and it will end up being called the December forecast. Now, we forecast every 2 months, but to me, if we're going to have a disciplined, sensible forecast thing that gets approved so that it's not just a moving target and no one's accountable, I think we have to plan on having a forecast to look at in the month of December, which, given the unfortunate way that actuals come out, we'll be lucky if we even have the October actuals in the month of December to come up with a forecast. But I'm very concerned about that. Otherwise, we're just all kidding ourselves that we're going to get into forecast mode.
I'd like to speak to what Marnie just said. Marnie, I understand what you're saying as far as the executives being responsible for the budget calendaring from what's coming from management. But the governance structure also has to deal with approval. This committee is in the loop and the rest, and so I think it is appropriate for us to be involved with that. I'll just say now that my big priority in this whole process is that the process start with a meeting between management and the local board for a discussion in principle of station goals, so that when the management goes off and constructs the budget, the input with the governance structure about overarching goals for the station has already happened. And so I think that kind of thing that deals with when input occurs from the governance side, which is ultimately responsible for approving, is important. So that's my point on that. But on the other point about needing to deal with when we're doing forecasting and having that in the calendar so that we know that this finance committee will consider those items on specific, by specific dates during the year is crucial. Anybody else?
Casey, please.
Go ahead.
As far as the budget calendar, you know, since we're a volunteer organization dealing with several smaller boards, it's also important, I think, that in addition to the, you know, the technical parts of the budget, that we calendar in things like an orientation for the treasurers so that they understand the process. Whoever the new treasurers are going to be in the same situation we were this year. And those kinds of things, kind of along the lines of what you're saying, Dave, starting with, you know, looking at philosophy for each LSB and making sure there's an understanding between that philosophy and what direction you want the station to go in, and an understanding by management in that, but also a process so that the budget calendar actually calendars in things like orientations into the budget process. And, you know, really actually does calendar in submissions by GMs to finance committees and finance committees back to LSBs and all of that kind of thing, which is, you know, I think it's going to be a little more detailed. And, you know, for someone like you, Marnie, who, you know, it's automatic to you. You understand these things so much more than some of the rest of us. I think people coming in who don't are going to need that kind of detail.
Lonnie, let me ask you, on the, what you presented on the policies manual side of things, you had talked about this larger issue of calendaring. Do you feel that we're clear on what the next steps in that process are going to be, or do we need to do something on that?
Well, I think that one way to go is there are two or three things that seem to me that we need to produce for the next 30 days, and that would be a budget calendar and timetable, as we've been discussing. We need to produce a reforecast. I agree with Marnie. At least we ought to have a first look at how the reforecast might look station to station. And I like LaVarne's idea of bringing together the business managers and the other folks. It's just a matter of budget, though, as always, and have a go at the process how all of us would work together, all of the stakeholders, in producing product for the whole year and the process that we would use to do it. It's just so hard getting people together during the holidays.
December. Well, on that point, you talked about what we needed to do in the next 30 days.
Yeah.
I have a meeting now set for 2 weeks from today, and I could imagine us having one more 2 weeks after that and still being enough in front of the holidays for people to be able to make it, and that would really be our last meeting of the year. So
yeah.
What do you think you can bring forward by the next meeting, and would we need as a committee to do anything between now and then to move those things forward?
Well, I have two dates that I did jot down, possible meeting dates, December 8th and the 15th.
Right. But we have one on December 1st that we've already scheduled. So the question is, what needs to happen, or what's going to happen between now and December 1st from your side and from our side?
Well, assuming we're talking three meetings, 1st, 8th, and 15th?
No, that's too much. We're going to meet on the 1st for sure, and then we may choose to meet again, and I would think it would be better. We could do the 8th or the 15th. I'd argue for the 15th, but we haven't decided that yet.
Well, I'd argue for the 15th, too. And I'd say that whoever does, and I certainly will work on it, is we produce by the 8th or 15th meeting a budget calendar. That would be the first step. We won't be able to finish it, but we can certainly get it as much of a product done as we can. A reforecast whatever, to the best of our ability, as Marnie has suggested. And a list of goals, tentatively, that we as a committee would like to tackle with dates. when they would be agendized. That would be the product for the 15th, deliverable on the 8th.
Okay. Well, I hope we can get a report on the budget calendar by the December 1st meeting. The other stuff is the target. And Marty, can you comment on the nuts and bolts of the forecasting process of what you think, who should come to whom with what information and what should we be approving by when? Because let's say we meet again on the 15th. From where do the forecasting numbers come, and in what form is it?
I believe they come from management to the NFC. I believe they should come forth in the month of December, and they should be the best estimate, and they should identify, we will too, they should identify which are the wiggles that are going to need special approval because they've gone outside of the budgets that were approved.
Well, and one of those I'll just comment on is this whole executive director thing. When we get through that process, there may be expenses associated with that process that may need to be folded in.
Yeah. There are a number of unbudgeted items that are popping up, so maybe this is a way of taking care of those.
Got it.
Okay, so can we get some rough guess again by the December 1st meeting? So your report on the December 1st meeting will include just noticing us about where those areas are, and then we'll have a subsequent meeting in December where we'll actually formally review the recommendations that will go to the board at the January meeting?
Yeah, my heart quickens to point out that December 1st is not far away. I think that if we can get some of us working together, a budget, proposed budget calendar, draft, whatever, a reforecasting schedule, that is, we would know that if we could deliver it by the 15th, and then the issue of the goal calendar for the year. I would take the 1st as a deadline, the 8th as an outside possibility for a meeting on the 15th. Does that work for people?
I think since we are meeting on the 1st,
yeah.
I take the rest of it. But for the budget calendar, you've got what Marty sent. Baruti's going to send you what he has. If you could just get us a rough draft of that so that we can consider it on the 1st so that we can get a final thing ready by our next meeting in December, that would be very helpful. And then the rest of it we just leave till the second meeting in December.
All right, let's take the draft by the 1st.
Okay, great.
I'll get it together.
Can you note that in the minutes, Casey and Baruti? Will you email Lonnie and the committee what you've been working on?
Yeah, I already sent it out.
Thanks. All right, anything on the agenda? We've taken our 15 minutes. Okay, hearing nothing else, then the next thing on the agenda, hang on, let me get back there, is the report from the working groups. A half hour each, the Surplus and Reserves Policy and Procedure Group and the Accounting Standards Group. I know the Surplus Reserves Group tried to meet yesterday unsuccessfully, although Marnie and Lonnie met. Lonnie, is there movement on that? Do you want to report on that? Did you guys have a discussion? Where are we on Surplus Reserve?
Marty, you want to join me in it, but it's surplus reserves. There were two. Marty and I did meet, and we did begin the discussion. Did send out a report to finance on it. You should have it in your email boxes. And we looked at two issues. One was the issue surrounding surplus. And here... I can read, I'd rather just read from what I sent. Is that okay?
Please do.
Lonnie, may I just say, I hate to interrupt, I seem to be getting left off your emails. I don't have anything from you in the inbox that you say you sent to the group today. Just like yesterday, I didn't get the September financials. Unfortunately, you were able to send it separately to me, so sorry, but...
That may be the Yahoo Groups list, and I'll check the roster. You want your SBC Global address to get it?
Yes.
Okay, I'll look on that.
All right. I am read from what our draft was. Did people get it or not? Oh, it's called Notes on the Working Group on Reserves.
What I got was all that policy and procedure stuff, but not the thing, not anything about surpluses. But maybe I didn't look closely enough. Did anybody else get it?
It was from yesterday?
Oh, today.
Today. No, I don't have it.
I can read it. Oh, God. Oh. Arnie, maybe I'm not, now I'm not trusting my emails. Do you have your, are you sitting by yours?
I'm sitting by my email, my web email, and I have nothing from you within, like, I don't know, what, the last 6 hours or so? 7, 8 hours?
Oh, yeah, the web, we are having our email revamped. Pete's moving it to a bigger server, so we've been having trouble. I can read what's here.
Sure. Works for me.
Okay. Says, hi all. Marnie and I met yesterday and reviewed several options as to reserve and surplus policy. One, we both felt that the present board policy of requiring the budgeting of 1 month surplus is a prudent fiscal policy and should be maintained as currently enunciated by the board. The actual definition slash formula of what is the 1 month surplus budgeting guideline is at present that this surplus is equivalent to 1/12 of the annual operating budget, including central services, and 1/12 of the cash and capital expenditures, excluding any spending from prior year surpluses.
Wait, can you read that again? You said the what?
It would be 1/2 of the 1/12 of the annual budget.
No, I heard that, the beginning of the sentence.
Oh, yeah. That the definition of the one-month surplus is, I'll just shorten it up a little bit, is 1/12 of the annual operating expense budget.
That's the shortening is the part I don't want. Are you saying that it is now or it should be?
It says the actual definition formula of what is this one-month surplus budgeting guideline is at present that this surplus be equivalent to 1/12 of the annual operating expense budget per unit, including central services, and 1/12 of cash and capital expenditures, excluding specifically any spending from prior year surpluses, e.g. for capital spending that's been pre-approved by the PNB.
Okay, well, that's our old discussion. I won't revisit it. Go on.
Yeah, well, maybe we can work out something now. Now, the second one actually is fairly new. Point number two, we felt that we should adopt a policy along the following lines. One, resolve that the Board of Directors, this is in resolution format, resolve that the Board of Directors adopt a policy which states each fiscal year the Board shall require that each station sequester X percent of all surplus funds derived from the operating results for that year to be utilized by the Board to fund critical but unfunded projects. If these funds are to be kept at the local station bank account level, they must be identified on the balance sheet as restricted cash, or there must be an agreement that these funds are physically transferred to the National Office bank account, but with a similar restricted and segregated cash account designation. So, you have a proposed policy on reserves, proposed policy on surpluses. And what's a surplus? If a station over the year overproduces, that is, they exceed the budget, and the budget is 1.5 and comes in at 1.6, that X percent, that percentage is undetermined here, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, whatever that number ends up being in terms of our recommendation, be set aside in a separate segregated fund controlled by the Board of Directors that could be utilized for unfunded projects, the ones we've been talking about, like Free Speech Radio News, Race and Nationality, Spanish Language. This would be a source of funding for those kinds of critical but unfunded projects. The issue of where the funds would be located is addressed. It could be located at the station, but in a special segregated fund and bank account, and it would be identified on the balance sheets as to what the balances were there. Or it could be located, if the board so chose, at the national office in a similarly segregated cash bank account controlled by the board. So these are what we call board sequestered funds. These funds belong to the board for the board to utilize in the ways that it sees fit. Okay, those are the two suggestions.
Great, thanks. Discussion, I have some strong things I want to say on that, but I'll yield to others on the committee first.
Hi, this is LaVarne Day.
Go ahead.
You know, appreciate the work that the working groups have done. That's really good because that's what we've been striving for, is to put something in writing. But just a suggestion on the excess of surplus over budget or whatever. You know, I feel that the station should have some the ability to be rewarded for good financial management and for exceeding like fund drives, and that their listeners should be rewarded, so that the station should have some ability to use those funds for special projects at the station, whether it's programming, facilities, or whatever. So I think there has to be some reward for good fiscal management and for listeners who have contributed over the budgeted fund drive targets, and that would be a reward for good fiscal management, plus for the listeners embracing the programming at the stations.
This wouldn't.
It's Marnie.
It wouldn't preclude it. It's just some, you know, if you overproduce, LaVarne, $100 at a station, or you got $10,000 more than the budget. This proposal says that 20% or 10% of that would be sequestered for unfunded critical projects, but the remainder, the station would keep.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was kind of like in and out. This is.
Yeah. Marnie?
Excuse me. I'm sorry. I just want to complete. I'm sorry I didn't hear all that because I was kind of in and out. But then I'll think about the 10% and 20%. Thank you.
Marnie, and then I'd like to go. Go ahead, Marnie.
And as Lonnie says, he just left a blank for the percent. We didn't come up with a percent. We didn't say 10. We didn't say 20. We didn't say 1. It's just a question mark. That's all. But
okay.
I do think it is important that we reward people for good fiscal management, because I see plenty of bad fiscal management going on, and there's not enough rewards. There's not enough carrots and sticks.
Okay, I'd like to say that I one of the things I wanted the surplus in reserve for, well, let me back up. Thank you for doing it, and yes, it's very helpful to have it in writing. I also want to say that I think this is an area where we're going to have some different philosophical approaches to this question, and I hope the discussion isn't one of wrestling over position but achieving a synthesis. So that said, what I was hoping we would be doing on the front of surplus and reserve use is dealing with how it gets treated in the budget and in other places. Now, one of the things that I think should be done is identifying reserves for specific purposes. For example, Mark has raised the issue, the idea of a solidarity fund, which would be for stations in trouble to borrow from. I've made the point that we should have a severance fund, because stations that need to pay severance expenses are very often those least in a position to do so. There might be any number of other specific purposes that you would use reserves for. My problem with this formulation is what it amounts to is essentially an increase in central services. It says if you go over goal, you're still going to have to pay your 20% central services on your income, and in addition, you lose even more of that to unspecified things that the national board may choose to do. Now, if that percent that you sacrifice in that way is anything more than zero, it's an active disincentive to go over goal. There's also a problem with the way you represent the purposes of your fundraising to your listeners. Most of our fundraising around the network during drives says, help the station survive, help us grow, blah, blah, blah. So there would need to be something told to the stations about the way they fundraise and say, help us go over goal, and then, you know, we'll get to keep some amount of it or something like that. Because even though, as Ambrose says, all the money that goes to Pacifica stations is really going to Pacifica, it's the case that a nonprofit cannot solicit funds for one project and then transfer them to another project. You have to tell people who you're soliciting the funds for, what it's used for. So that would have to go into a modified fundraising appeal. I also think it's a problem to have indefinite size surplus funds. I think what we should say is we have identified things we need. We have capital needs. We have the severance fund needs. We have rainy day fund needs, whatever they are. And this is how much they are. And once you've paid into that, once those accounts go to a certain point, you don't just keep doing it indefinitely and basically transferring money out of the station to something in case we need it. The discussion, the particular discussion about what we use it for and whether we create new surplus or reserve requirements should be based on what we're doing it on. So I do think that a lot of these things act as disincentives. And lastly, on the point of what the one-month thing is, rather than fight about what it is, I completely disagree. And I don't want to revisit that fight with what is being said it is. Let's talk about what it should be rather than try to define what it is, since there's obviously some contentiousness about it. And I say that firmly believing that I can demonstrate that's not the case. But let's not go there. So I'd like to see, last point. I'd like to see in the budgets, the reserves go into line items there, so you can see yourself paying into them through the course of the year. You say, this is how much is going to go into that reserve, as opposed to having it come down to the bottom line and just say, okay, that bottom line is money that we go and do these other things with. And I would like other people more knowledgeable in accounting to respond to whether that's a good structure.
I'm so glad you said that. Because I think that your lack of accounting knowledge is showing through. But why don't I have someone like a CPA on the call talk to it?
Yeah, that's what I was asking Baruti.
I'm sorry, I had to chuckle after Marnie made that comment. Give it to me again. What did you want to do, Dave? I want to make sure I'm clear on the question.
I thought that the payment into reserves should be something that's in the budget. So you're budgeting to pay into certain reserves as opposed to having it just drop down to the bottom line. But I wanted to hear your comments on that, because the structure of the way we account for those things is a question to me, particularly if we have specific accounts for specific reserve purposes as opposed to just some sort of free-floating slush fund for things we decide when we feel like.
From an accounting, if you want your budget to actually represent or be close to how your statements would be if you presented them externally, then you wouldn't really show it as an expense. Basically, what you're saying is make the reserve sort of an expense before you get to the bottom line to then determine what your net is before the reserve. So, I think we wouldn't want to do our budget like that.
But I
understand the point that you're trying to get to. You're trying to get to the point where that money is kind of pulled away in some form or fashion. So, but I wouldn't lay it out in the budget like that.
But that would be an appropriate way to do it.
Well, I don't see much difference, Dave, really, because what I'm hearing you say is if we were to go on the air and identify that we're raising money for a solidarity fund, a capital fund, a digitization fund, you know, whatever we would want to call it, that we could identify a target number, say $500,000, and that number we would work to in the fundraising part of it. And then we would have accounting protocols in terms of how to account for it, et cetera. I don't see a contradiction.
Well, I like that way of allocating, like even allocating days of fundraising for specific reserve funds. And then you're telling the listeners, really, this is what we're using it for. And then when people, and it's clear when we're raising funds that that's what it's for. And I have no issue or problem with going that route. The other route, I think, creates disincentives and increases the feeling that the national bodies, and I won't specify the office, the board too, are just being, you know, drags on the stations.
Well, but it seems to me that if we were, say, following that suggestion, were to have 2 days of national, have on-air fundraising, 1 day, 2 days, choose a number, for some specified goal, whether it be capital or solidarity, we raise the money, put it in a fund, and then the board or whoever would take it from there. But there's a separate idea that you did mention, and that separate idea I thought I heard too, was that stations in raising some funds would want to be able to budgetize and have what might be their own local digitization fund or capital fund. I heard both ideas.
I didn't say that, but I think that's a fine idea.
That builds some incentive into the effort as well for both network or national network or board needs and local station needs. So I'm not seeing that, you know, if you take out the percentage notion, which we had put forth, and choose a dollar target for the given fiscal or whatever, and look at how that might be organized around on-air fundraising, then that solves the issue of message. We're raising money for Solidarity Fund. We're looking for $500,000. Here's how it will be spent.
Keep building those things. We keep doing it until we get to whatever our identified targets for each of those various reserves is. And I think that creates also a lot less resistance than saying we want a fund, and we may want some fund sitting out there for unfunded mandates and call it the unfunded mandate fund or something like that. I don't know. That may be wise, too. But, you know,
Dave,
just
can I say something when you
let me ask Marnie, you know, you're advocating the continual building of surplus, but at some point, you know, you get to a point where you have enough money in the bank, no? I mean, we could... It needs to be 2 months or 3 months, but at some point, it seems to me you stop saying you need to keep adding surplus for surplus sake, no?
I think we'll be a long time before we get to where Pacifica is a nice, healthy, financial, fiscally sound organization. I don't think we're looking at it in the next 5 years. And if CPB funding should get pulled, what'll that affect the network? $1.8 million suddenly kavoom? That's why I support creating surpluses.
Wait, but Bonnie, I'm not arguing against surplus. I'm talking about the indefinite call for continued growth of surplus as opposed to specifying a specific goal that you say when we get to that much, then the cup is full, and we don't need to keep adding to the cup just to show we can do it.
Oh.
Can I speak to it, Dave?
No, but there's no intent. I mean, this budgets are done every year, Dave, so every year...
Okay. Go ahead, Bernie. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I wanted to say I don't. I mean, if we indicated that 10 to whatever percentage, I mean, it wouldn't have to be too big. I don't see maybe I don't see the resistance that maybe you've observed already to people raising money if they have to give a percentage to a particular purpose. I mean, I don't see 10% or even 20% getting us to the point where people feel as though they're being taken advantage of by the foundation or whatever. I mean, for people to give up 10 cents on a dollar or 15, 20 cents on a dollar, I don't see them. Now, if you said 50 cents or you have to give up 60 cents of your extra money, then I could see we're getting in the area where people are going to say, well, wait a minute, you know, this is too much. But I think a reasonable percentage, and I believe is the recommendation somewhere between 10 and 20%?
We didn't actually talk percentages, but I think 10, 20% is a reasonable range.
Yeah, I mean, I see, you know, I don't see 10%, you know, people saying that, you know, that's too much to give for a particular national need. And I think another way to approach this is that maybe we should start telling people or reminding the listeners that although you're supporting a station, you're supporting a foundation. I mean, that the station is not standing alone and, you know, it's not going to survive alone. It's going to survive because it's part of a larger entity. So maybe people... You know, we need to start generating a broader vision as opposed to just our station. Maybe we need to project a broader vision of the foundation and that, you know, of course you are helping your station, but you're also helping the Pacifica Foundation. I know locally, you know, everything, you know, is our station, BAIBIBI, but I know, and people do mention the foundation, but I think maybe that needs to be something that we need to, consider as, in terms of this whole process that we begin to talk about, you know, the station, but also part of the broader foundation and how the station is part of a group that needs, you know, that we're all in this together.
And if I could add, look at us right now. We're trying to figure out how to come up with $400,000 extra for FSRN and whatever extra for Spanish, and we got no money. Well, that's why we need to build some reserves. And I think there's always demands, and then there's always capital, and that's something else. If you've got the surplus, even at the station level, then you can do some of the capital that you need to do without going on a special capital campaign. And if the concept that it is being proposed as ad infinitum, then let's put a limit on it. For 3 years, let's try this approach, and at the end of 3 years, let's revisit. I mean, if that makes it the spoonful of sugar go down better for you, it works for me.
There's another problem, which is right now there's kind of the way it's structured, there's a disincentive to exceed goal. So there would be a greater incentive to overestimate revenue and fall short, for which there's no penalty, because you wouldn't get that extra levy. Whereas if you budgeted conservatively and said we're going to limit what we're going to say we're going to make, then if you go over, you're actually paying functionally more, a greater levy. So that would be, I would think, if I'm a manager and I say, well, if I overestimate how much I'm going to raise, and then I can put in all that spending in my budget, and if I fall a little short, I fall a little short, or I can lowball it, go over, but then I have less money available to spend on these local things. I think that idea, we need to work a little bit on how the incentives work when we do that kind of a thing.
And LaVarne was just talking about rewarding good fiscal management. I saw plenty of bad fiscal management in the last fiscal year, starting right there at KPFA. And it was supposed to deliver like $300,000 or $400,000 more than it did last year. And there is no penalty for that, kind of technically.
Right.
And I think that is something to be concerned about.
And so that's exactly the point. There would if they had instead budgeted conservatively and gone over under this policy, there would be a net penalty. Whereas if they budget optimistically and fall short, there's no such additional levy. They still got to use all their money. And so that is a problem. It's a perverse incentive.
No, not if you do budgeting properly and approvals properly. You don't do that. I mean, I don't know how to respond to that. It's just like, sorry, I won't say anything more. It's just foreign to me. Sorry.
Yeah, I don't know, Dave. It sounds, if I get an extra $100 and 10% of it goes to national projects, or I don't know, race and nationality, choose your favorite project, seeing that as a penalty is a strange way of putting it. Having the 90% of the money you raised be useful, available for local projects or whatever, is the other way of looking at it, and that's a good thing.
I understand, but if I'm somebody who's budgeting, I say, if I budget to raise $1,000 and I make $1,100, then $10 of it leaves.
Yeah.
As opposed to my budgeting to make $1,100, and then none of it, then I get all 1,100 and I don't lose that extra 10, which would you do?
Well, I mean, to me, if you're looking at it that way, then you've got an employee who's not working in the best interest of the foundation.
Thank
and
you.
I don't get that.
I disagree.
They should be fired if they're going to do that, and I mean
yeah.
At the PM level.
No, the foundation includes the And
course,
I could argue
you're
it the other way
10,
and say,
10%,
you know, to what degree is the national actually providing meaningful support for the stations? And I think the perception at around a lot of the stations is we get told what to do, we get ordered around, a lot of money goes out that we can't spend on the local development when we're raising it here locally, and where's the beef? What are we actually going to see? And we have to be sensitive to that because there's an element of reality to it. The national office, unlike any other unit in the network, doesn't use any volunteer power, and the salaries are relatively higher. And so as a unit, in terms of the amount of money it uses in order to be able to provide services, it's relatively higher than any other sector of the network.
I don't know where you're making the claim, but I don't hear any support for that. You know what I'm going to do, because I've heard that claim made so many times. So the fact of the matter is, I've done this at other organizations. If I were to take out the expenses for the national office that are just national office expenses, as opposed to expenses that really are expenses that take on, that if we were to allocate them out to the states, let's take something like comp insurance, workers' comp. We, in fact, pay the whole bill, $250,000, but most of that is not for the national office. That's not, although it shows up as our expense. We mentioned about the high overhead for the national office. That's not true. 10%, the 17% that you quote, or the 20% or whatever that number is, that's of listener support. The actual figure is that if you were to take it the way it's normally done and look at the overhead expenses as a fraction of, say, revenue or even total expenses, the overhead expenses of the national office are 8 to 10%, the most lean corporate organization in the world has an overhead of 10%. So we're a lean organization, not an expensive one. The way administration and overhead. So a lot of these myths have grown up, and people make the assertion, but Dave, it's just not true.
Might be useful.
Is it time to move the agenda? Are we getting bogged down again in Dave's? I'm sorry.
But, yeah.
Well, are we getting bogged down? Is it time to move the agenda?
I mean, I'd just like to say that I think that this is a good start, and it's hard for me to make too many comments. You know, Lonnie, when you get a chance to send it in writing again, I don't know if I lost it or it didn't come through or what.
That for you,
I appreciate that, but you know, I think that, you know, we're arguing something that we haven't really even been able to study in detail, and that we all need to come to this with the understanding that we're trying to support the entire network and meet the needs of the individual stations at the same time. And it's going to be a balancing act, but it can be done. And so,
what I'd like to suggest, and Marnie, no, it's not time to move the agenda. We're still under time for this item. But I think we should include the managers, the unit managers, and the including the affiliates director, who's not a unit manager, but it would be good to have her on those working group calls when we're dealing with this, so we can basically hear it from their perspective, it just takes care of it at the front end rather than the back end. What do people think of that?
I think that not enough people are participating in the working groups. Yesterday, a case in point.
Yeah, my fault. I intended to. I got bogged down. I'm sorry.
Yep, me too. My apologies. In terms of constructive alternatives, what do we think about including the managers in the invitation list for the next meeting of that group?
I think it's premature, Dave. We ought to have a product first and work it through and see what we've got on this committee. And at least we are in a position to do. I think it's just premature to bring all those folks together at this point. So as I think somebody pointed out, we have not seen the even this in writing, and I need to get that to you folks. I'm doing that now as I speak, and hope it reaches you. So.
Okay. Well, I'm willing to defer until we get it a little further along, if that's what people want to do.